As you help your children navigate a minefield of temptation, Josh McDowell has this reminder for parents.
Rules without relationships leads to rebellion. Computers without relationships leads to rebellion. Cell phones without relationships leads to rebellion. Texting without relationships leads to rebellion.
This is Revive Our Hearts with Nancy Lee DeMoss for Wednesday, September 4th. Yesterday, we began a two-part series called Raising Children with a Heart for Purity. I think Josh McDowell startled a lot of parents by describing how prevalent pornography is among children at younger and younger ages. Today, he'll talk about one of the most important things you can do as you help children deal with temptation: develop a close relationship with them. Josh has written about these topics in books like The Bare Facts and Straight Talk with Your Kids About Sex. Here are Nancy and Josh to pick up their conversation.
I have a sister who has five teenage children, so I'm freshly burdened for this subject, and I know it's parenting today is even so much different than when you were parenting your kids. Certainly the same principles can be applied. But I know you have a heart for this digital generation. And one of the things I'm seeing is how much influence their peers have on these kids. If you were parenting today, teenagers, children, how would you keep the channels of communication open so that your kids want to talk to you and not just get their influence from their friends?
I would do it the way I did it with my four children over the last 34 years. Why? I document this in a book. One of the first parts of the book is, parents, you are the key. All the research shows kids want to learn about sex, love, everything from mom and dad before their peers, anyone. And I document in here where a major organization, university, wanted to help parents. Because they saw when parents started having children 7, 8, 9 years old, they really got, am I going to lose my child? The hormones are kicking in. The peer pressure, their friends, high school, college, will I lose my child? So they did a major study, which is all documented in Straight Talk book. And they wanted to find out, is there anything greater than their hormones, their peer pressure, everything? After millions of dollars and some good research, they found only one thing that overrides a child's hormones kicking in. Now think of that. Child's peer pressure, high school, all the way through college. What do you think it is? The only thing they found is more powerful is a loving, close, intimate relationship with their daddy, not the mother, their daddy. Overrides the hormones, everything. And guess what they concluded? Up to 25 years old. The relationship with a daddy. This is why I wrote a book called How to Be a Hero to Your Children. How do you build that loving, intimate relationship? And I have a huge chapter in here on it. 7 simple principles on how to build a relationship with your child where they'll respond and not rebel, that can produce a relationship greater than their hormones, greater than their peers. A loving, close relationship with mom and dad will override the peers.
Okay, some of those principles, and I'm thinking about the era when the kids are, you know, they're closing themselves in their rooms. They come home from school. How'd your day go? Fine. There's, you know, one word answers, rolling eyes at the parents, not opening up. What are some of those principles that can help parents, dads and moms, establish an open relationship with their kids?
Well, one, you got to start young. I heard my son, we did a conference the other day in an interview 3 days ago by radio, and they asked my son, well, how'd your parents do it? And they said, whenever we sat down the table, whatever, we always talked. They always asked us about our day and everything, and we learned to respond. In fact, one day my dad had something he had to do, and he got up and left, and they said, Dad, where are you going? We're not through talking yet. And these are my kids, because if you start young, it becomes part of them, where you're listening to them, you're sharing with them. But here's the key as a parent, not to be judgmental or to shame. Normally, when something comes up that's not really healthy, I wouldn't address the issue right there. I would wait. I would listen to them, take it in, and then later said, remember, Kelly, when you brought that up, is it okay if I share with you how I view that? My kids would always say yes.
So you're not hyperventilating at the dinner table?
Never. Never. You always got to be even keel as a parent.
Yeah, I got to say, I don't know about for dads, but that's really hard for moms.
But there's seven simple principles. I'll state them. Number one is unconditional acceptance. When a child feels unconditionally acceptance, they have a security. And the more secure my children became, the more open they became. I could hear things from my children most parents never dream of hearing. Why? They're not afraid of the hammer coming down, of the judgment, of the shaming coming down on them.
Okay, hold on. So some parents are hearing you say that, and they're thinking, well, are you saying I'm supposed to accept these wrong choices my kids are making?
No. Unconditional acceptance is that your child needs to know that the basis of your relationship is not their behavior or anything else. As my kids heard this over and over and over again, honey, you're creating the image of God with infinite value, dignity, and worth. My kids heard that all, and my acceptance of you is because I am your father, and you are created with infinite value, dignity, and worth. And then when it came to things they were doing wrong, I said, you know, honey, this is not healthy for you because it'll rob you of who you are, created in the image of God.
But it doesn't affect my acceptance.
That's right. Your performance does not. My basis for you. But let me get to the others. It'll come to the performance and everything. Affirmation. That I learn I need to always affirm my children's emotions. For example, in Romans, it says, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. New Living Translation says, if others are happy, be happy with them. If they're sad, share their sorrow. So my kids had come home and something bad happened or something exciting happened. I had to step in and affirm that emotion. It gives them a sense of authenticity, and it's okay to feel that way on there. Then another is appreciation. I learned I needed to catch my kids doing things right first and express appreciation. It didn't mean I didn't catch them doing things wrong, but that needed to be underneath the overall umbrella, catching them doing things right and expressing appreciation. Thank you, Kelly, for putting your clothes in the hamper. Your mom will appreciate that. Sean, thank you for sweeping off the porch. I appreciate that. Now, would you do the other half? Katie, thank you for doing. I appreciate that. Heather, I heard what you did at school day. The teacher called me. I just want to say I appreciate the attitude you have. Oh, my gosh. That is one of the most powerful things in a child's life. Instead of catching them doing things wrong in discipline, you first catch them doing things right and express appreciation. For every time one of my children did something wrong, or if I was a loving father, I would discipline them, there was at least 25 things they had done right. And if I don't take time to catch them doing those things right, I've lost the right to discipline them. The other is express affection. For my children, they needed to hear me every day, 10 times to each one, say, I love you. Sometimes I'd go, oh my gosh, I didn't do it today. I'd get in, I'd go in, I'd whisper in my daughter's ear, I love you, honey. I want him to hear it.
Just kept saying it.
That's right. Another is approach your child's world. Always look at time. When can I step into my child's world? Because when you step into your child's world, it says to them, what I'm interested in, my daddy, my mommy's interested in. What I care about, my mommy cares about. And so I'd always find out where are my children step into the world. For example, my son was into comic books at about 11 years of age. And so when I'd go on the road, I'd take a list of the books he had, and I'd go into a trading store, and I'd say, do you have any books on? He always had four or five different ones on Superman, Spider-Man, and the Hulk. And so I'd buy four or five, and then I'd go home and say, son, I got a surprise for you. And I'd give him one of the comic books. I had three left for the next three trips. And we'd sit down. He'd always be on my right. We'd sit on the floor, my arm around, and we'd read through the comic book together. And you know what that said to my son? My dad travels all over the world writing books, speaking to people, leading people to Christ, serving God, but he cares about my comic books. What I care about, my daddy cares about.
Which also illustrates another point you make about relationship, and that's availability.
Oh, when we're available to children, it says one thing, I am important. I am important to my dad. There's no other way to communicate importance except availability. And for example, I always taught my kids that you can interrupt me at any time. So I would say, excuse me, Pastor, but my five-year-old son needs his dad's attention. Yes, what is this? Sure. Okay, be sure to tell your mom. Now, Pastor, where were we? Do you know what that says to my kids? I'm more important than anyone else in my dad's life. I did it with the President of the United States. He came to hear me speak. And I was, and one of my family members came into the president. I said, excuse me, sir, but a family member needs his daddy's. I turned on, came back and said, now where were we, sir? He walks out of the church, never said goodbye or anything. I thought, boy, is that being rude? But there must be something there because we have the relationship there, he would say. And I got a, on White House Station, I got a little note later saying, please forgive me for leaving without so abruptly without saying goodbye, but you made me feel so guilty. I went out to the car, asked my security to get out, locked all the doors, called my two daughters, told them I loved them and talked to them for an hour. See, even the President of the United States needs that. Mm. But what it said to my kids, I am more important to my daddy than the President of the United. How do I show that? Availability. You can interrupt me. You do it respectfully and everything. You don't say, well, you go over there and sit out. No. And you know what I found out? The adults need to hear that more than the kid needs to hear it. That pastor needs to see, you know, I need to treat my child that way. I need to be available to my child. Another is accountability. They all start with A's. Accountability. If we truly love our children, then we will give them reasonable limits, guides, boundaries, and hold them accountable. I do not believe any teenage child can really, truly, in the gut of their being, believe mom or dad loves me if those parents haven't given rules and regulation held them accountable. And I could write a whole book just on that. It says to a child, one, I'm responsible, self-control, and I am loved. Accountability within the context of relationship. You see, rules without relationships lead to rebellion. Rules within the context of relationship leads to response and love.
Now, there got to be times when you felt the restrictions were reasonable, but your kids didn't. Or kids won't necessarily. You have a different definition of reasonable.
This is why I always negotiated with my children. And most parents think that's horrible. No. You see, if I don't negotiate with my children, they don't learn how to make decisions for their own life. They don't learn how to set boundaries in their own life. So I'll go back and forth, say, well, what do you think would be the time to be home? Well, Dad, I think by midnight. Well, why do you say that? Well, Dad, because this and this, and haven't I been trustworthy with everything else? Well, you know, honey, I was thinking 10:30 because of this and that. Tell you what, let's make it 11:15. Oh, my gosh. But see, my children in that context heard why I would prefer these boundaries. I was able to understand my daughter. Why they? And often, my kids could convince me I was wrong. Well, if I am wrong, then I want to change. How do you do that? Negotiating with your children. Now, I am the father. They know that. And they know once that I say, no, honey, I want you home at 10:30, they know that's it. But that almost never happened without negotiation. Why? It was part of my mentoring my own children to show them how they set boundaries for their life, what they look for. And that's what I love as a dad, negotiating with your children. Most people think negotiating, well, that's so negative, you're giving in. No, I'm mentoring, I'm molding, I'm creating a true follower of Jesus Christ.
And when they overstep the boundaries, what happens then?
You must have discipline. You must follow through. My children always knew when I would set a limit on something. You never set discipline when you're upset or angry or emotionally involved, like you never go shopping when you're hungry because you do it wrong. You buy wrong, you're too severe. And so they always know their mother would come and say, honey, let's go in another room and talk. She never, ever said anything in front of the kids.
She would say this to you, let's go talk.
In front of the kids.
Right.
And Daddy would say, honey, don't you think that's a little too severe? I mean, 60 days grounded for coming in 15 minutes late, you know. And I would say 90% of the time I backed off and I'd go back out. And my kids would always be waiting right on the other side of the door. And my kids knew their father would probably say this, you know, I was too severe. And I'm sorry for that. This is what it would be. And then I always wanted to elevate my children's mother in their presence. And I'd say, you know, Katie, Kelly, Heather, or Sean, you better go say thanks to your mother because you would really be in trouble if it hadn't been for your mother. And so I always wanted to build up my wife in the presence of my children. But often I was too severe.
And yet she supported you front of them.
She would always say, honey, no matter what you do, I will support you.
Let's talk about social media, something you didn't have to really worry about when your kids were teenagers, but every parent has to be concerned about it now. It's everywhere. It's ever present. It's 24/7. How do you encourage parents to think about managing social media with their kids?
You've got to realize one thing that will override the negative impact of social media is relationships. It comes back to that, Nancy. Social media without relationships leads to rebellion and unhealthy involvement.
And yet social media, and by that we're talking about all forms of Facebook and cell phones and texting and things I've probably not heard of yet, can have a way of really crippling relationships and stealing relationships. You don't have a conversation
usually,
at the dinner table.
Usually it happens where you don't have a relationship to be stolen. That usually happens that way. When a child grows up with you and you're always interacting and they really feel, boy, mom and dad is thinking about me, my best and everything, it's a little different ballgame, Nancy. And then this, we need to instill, and I point this out in there, that one of the greatest barriers to sexual involvement are values. The kids say it themselves. Are the values their parents implanted within their lives? And I always, from the time my kids were born, I wanted to impart values into their lives. Principles to live by and all. Healthy guides for life. Now, first of all, they had to see it in my life and my relationship with their mother. Because if I taught them one thing, respect, and I showed disrespect for their mother, I just negated everything I taught my kids.
So they've got to see it modeled.
They listen to more what I do than what I say. They hear it more.
Mm-hmm.
Second, I always need to show how that principle is biblically based and show how it can bless their lives. I only see this principle. God has given this principle. Why? Let me show you, son. Let me show you, honey. Because if you don't, this and this can happen, or this and this can happen. And when it comes to the social media, you want to handle it in a positive way, not a negative. If you're always putting it down, well, oh, I mean, you're not going to do this and that. Kids aren't going to listen to you. You establish your own values as a family. And you live those values out. And then you take the social media, Facebook, everything, and say, well, let's look at this. Negotiate with your children. Look at it. Well, is this healthy here? Well, yeah, Dad, because, well, let me share with you what I see here, and all back and forth.
You're seeing it, and I'm seeing it, these 4-, 5-, and 6-year-old kids who can't even get their eyes off the iPad or the iPhone or the iPhone out of their hands or the earbuds out of their ears. And there is no communication. It's a whole world that they're living in. And how are parents to think about this?
First of all, they've lost control, and they probably haven't established a really loving, intimate, caring relationship. And you got to start out when they're young by limiting their access to it.
So that's okay.
Absolutely. For example, if I were raising my kids right now with everything, when friends would come over to the house, I would have a box all padded right at the front door. All cell phones and iPads go there. Whew. Right when they walk in. Boy, and I could write a whole book on the negative things if you don't do that. They all go right there. Well, I need to call my mom. We'll go down at the door, call your mom. Put it back in there. Any of your friends that come over, have it that after 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, iPads, computers, whatever, is put in the master bedroom until the next morning. I would be hesitant to have a computer and iPad in a child's room with the door closed.
Would you tell your kids, I have to have access to your Twitter account, your Facebook account?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. There's nothing wrong with that.
And would you let them know I'm going to be looking at it?
Yes. And here again, you would negotiate that, Nancy. You wouldn't draw a direct line. Say, well, do you think as a mom that I should look at this? And I was always, now my kids are pretty smart. The first three were valedictorians. I mean, they're not dumb kids. And my one daughter at 5 years old could argue her mom right into a corner. She could have made a great lawyer today. So I negotiated with the kids, and I could always bring them around to where I was. But often I learned things that would let me give a little here, give a little there. Maybe 9 o'clock instead of 8 o'clock when you're this age, etc. But in negotiating with my kids, I could always – but if you don't start early doing that, by the time they're 13, 14, 15, you can't change it for the most part because it takes years to build that relationship with that child. And so, yes, negotiate. And I would say the phone can be off limits if I see you misusing it. And often it must be turned off, and you have tracking things for cell phones and everything else. When you're at school, it is turned off, or you don't take it to school with you. Also, you set the healthy guidelines. We got to be in control. But if you're in control without the relationship, you'll have rebellion. You can still have rebellion with a relationship, but nothing to the level. It's rules without relationships leads to rebellion. Computers without relationships leads to rebellion. Cell phones without relationships leads to rebellion. Texting without relationships leads to rebellion. You've got to start with that relationship and then negotiate with your children. That's positive.
And when it comes down to it, as a parent and now for you as a granddad, you're totally dependent on the Lord to connect the dots, to make it make sense to your kids. Just talk for a moment about the role of prayer and faith.
I'm dependent on the Lord and my wife. But with my children, first, forgiveness. How can you teach a child forgiveness if they don't see you forgiving them, asking forgiveness, forgiving others? My wife, Dottie, was the most popular kid at school. Why? She would go to school. If something happened in the morning or something that she was a little too sharp, she was wrong with the kids, and she didn't seek forgiveness right then, she'd always take 3 candy kisses. She'd go to school, take the kids right out of class, that child, and say, I was wrong. I owe you an apology. Will you forgive me?
She'd go to school and pull out one of your kids.
Oh, yeah. All the time. She was known for that. And give them 3 candy kisses. And one time, Katie's little friend, Katie must have been 11, 12 years old, said, what was your mom doing here again? She's here all the time. Said, well, my mom did this, and she came and asked for forgiveness. And a little girl said again, this stuck in Katie's mind, said, my mom has never done that. Mm-hmm. See? Mm-hmm. We taught forgiveness through modeling forgiveness. If you don't model it, it's pretty hard to teach it and a kid grasp it. Love for other people. Every Christmas, we would do things special. There was this woman who we all loved. She was a waitress, quite sickly, probably about 55, 60 years old, lived in this rinkety-dink little trailer there in Julian, California. Like for various Christmas, anyone, we took a beautiful little Christmas tree with all the lightings, with a whole bunch of wonderful gifts. The kids took their own money. We went and bought, and we went and we told her how much we loved her and how much God loved her. And we wanted to celebrate Christmas with her. We'd set up the tree for, build it, leave the gifts. That built in to my kid's mind, when you love someone, you show it. Mm-hmm. When you love someone, you show it. And so you teach through modeling it. You have to for children, especially for them to grasp at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. Prayer, they need to see us praying with them. They need to see us praying. They need to see us, our dependence upon Christ. I mean, they would pray so specifically, and I learned to pray specifically because listening to my children, and God would come through with it. It just blew my mind because I would pray generally. That way I'd always see answered prayer. My kids would pray so specifically, and then when it happened, we would sit down and we would discuss it and then thank God for answering our prayers.
Josh McDowell has been talking about why your relationship with your children is so important. When you enter their world at a young age, you really can have more of an influence than the media or peers. Josh has written a book, along with our friend Aaron Davis, called The Bare Facts. This would be a helpful book for you to review and then give your children. Or better yet, use it as a springboard for talking with your kids about important issues. The conversations that come out of this book will help your children prepare for waves of temptation in a digital age. And the time you spend together will help forge the kind of strong bond we've been hearing about today. We'd like to send you The Bare Facts by Josh McDowell and Aaron Davis when you support Revive Our Hearts with a gift of any amount. Ask for it when you call with your donation. The number is 1-800-569-5959. That's 1-800-569-5959. Or visit reviveourhearts.com. Each weekday, Revive Our Hearts is helping you find freedom, fullness, and fruitfulness in Christ. Please join us again tomorrow for Revive Our Hearts. Revive Our Hearts with Nancy Lee DeMoss is an outreach of Life Action Ministries.